Grenade is a pop culture-based show that dives into TV, movies, music, comics, and a whole lot more. And this is a solo episode, and it's the first episode in quite a while, weeks, maybe close to a month. I just needed some time to kind of work on a couple things behind the scenes, production-wise, but I think we're in a better place for it, so we can get back to business here and get back on the regular schedule. So I appreciate everyone's patience, and I want to say thanks for subscribing, thanks for tuning in. It means a lot to us here on the podcast. And like I just rattled off, the show is all about TV, movies, music, comics, and all kinds of other stuff. So buckle in tight, because we're going to be doing a little bit of everything on this episode, including our Crossing the Stream segment, which is our recommendation segment, where we recommend TVs, movies, comics, anything you can download on your phone or on your smart TV, on your tablet. And then I'm going to do a 2000 movies review of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. There'll be some spoilers in that one, but I'll definitely give you a warning on that one before that starts. And to start things off, I think I'm going to get going with some trending topics. One or two things that popped up recently that I want to address that I'm excited about. So we'll get going with that. And, you know, a quick correction on episode 336, which is the previous episode of the podcast, where I could not think of the comedian's name, which was Anthony Jeselnik, which, shame on me. Anthony Jeselnik's one of my favorites. I think we were talking about Daniel Tosh, and I couldn't remember of the other white comic that's has a very biting sense of humor, and I just wanted to correct that before we got going. So without further ado, let's get started, and I'll see you on the other side of this music break. So trending topics. There's a couple things I wanted to bring up, but I'll probably just do one. I'll probably focus on this one, which is a trailer for the film called The Creator that dropped this past weekend. It's starring John David Washington, and it's directed by Gareth Edwards. And Gareth Edwards had jumped on my radar years ago with the reboot to the Godzilla franchise, the MonsterVerse, which is what we call it today. And that one had, let's see, Bryan Cranston has starred in that film. And I really enjoyed that. And then a couple years after that, Gareth Edwards ended up directing Star Wars Rogue One, which is arguably one of the best Star Wars films. Definitely one of the best of the Disney era. And I always find it weird that Gareth Edwards, as a director, hasn't gotten as much fanfare, considering how much people love Rogue One. But anyway, so I've kind of tried to make sure I follow his career, because I'm such a big fan of those two films. So when The Creator dropped, I obviously recognized John David Washington, who I'd watched and enjoyed in the film Tenet a couple years back. But then I saw that Gareth Edwards was involved, so I glommed on. And I checked out the trailer, and it blew me away. It looks fucking awesome. It has very many elements from some of the seminal science fiction work, such as Blade Runner, and it did have some qualities, special effects wise, that it shared with Rogue One. Particularly the CGI, it's very high end, very clean, very thought out, very very immersive, from what it looks like in the trailer. One thing, the main takeaway for me is that a science fiction film like this brings what I like in a science fiction film occasionally, which is more it's more than just spectacle. Like, the spectacle is there, it looks amazing, but it also looks like there's a great story in there. It's very thoughtful. The type of stories that come along when you're doing an indie movie, this is obviously not indie, this is a 20th century I think it's 20th Century Fox. It's a big studio and very, like I said, very high-end special effects, but the story looks very grounded and it looks like it's very interested in the human condition, which I can appreciate in a science fiction film, regardless of the size of the budget. Let me see. I'll give you some more information on this film. The creator is directed by, like I said, Gareth Edwards. It stars John David Washington, Gemma Chan, Ken Watanabe, who I'm a big fan of. And the description of the film is, amid a future war between the human race and the forces of artificial intelligence, Joshua, John David Washington's character, a hardened ex-special forces agent grieving the disappearance of his wife, is recruited to hunt down and kill the creator, the elusive architect of advanced AI who has developed a mysterious weapon with the power to end the war and humankind itself. So very high stakes, and it's got everything you're looking for in a science fiction film. Explosions, laser fire, all that stuff, action sequences. But like I said, at the core of it, it's a very human story. And I feel you can get that by watching the trailer, which, again, I highly recommend checking it out. It's out now, the teaser trailer. And really looking forward to this film. It looks like it's, let's see, what's the release date? It says September 29th of this year of 2023. So looking for that, dropping in the fall. And I'm sure I'll be bringing up this film again whenever the new trailers drop, leading up to the release of the film in September. All right, so that's Trending Topics, and we'll move on to some Crossing the Streams.
We'll cross the streams.
You said crossing the streams was bad.
Cross the streams.
Not necessarily. There's definitely a very slim chance we'll survive.
Let's do it!
That's right, Crossing the Streams. So this is our recommendation segment. This is where we recommend anything that's available to you at this moment online. So it's anything like movies, TV shows, comic books, anything that you have access to that you can stop this podcast and then go and check it out and then come back to get more recommendations. But as of right now, I've got a handful of things, and I'll start out with the only TV show I'm currently watching, which is Demon Slayer, Kimetsu no Yaiba. I'm on season 3 is the current season that's being released right now. And it's titled Swordsmith Village Arc. And what was the previous season was Entertainment District Arc. And I'm an episode into the current season, but I've had already watched this episode. Earlier this year, they had released a compilation theatrical release film situation. It's not quite a film. It's like the final two episodes of the second season paired up with the first episode of season 3. And I went to the theater to watch that. I was pretty excited for the return of Demon Slayer. The second season was great, and I was looking forward to getting back into it. I don't watch, this is really the only, this is the extent of my anime watching is Demon Slayer. I've been a fan of animation for years, but there's a lot of anime out there. It's kind of intimidating to dive in, and it seems like with a lot of anime, there's a lot to take in just with one anime. So I'm just kind of paring it down just to this one, and I love it. It's fantastic. I've heard me talk about it before on the podcast, but I was really excited for this new season. And like I said, they released the two episodes of the last two episodes of the last season combined with this first episode. So I got to rewatch those two episodes from the Entertainment District, and then I got to sit and get teased on the third season. And I the way I'm watching it is through Crunchyroll. I did a subscription, and the subscription is about $8, which isn't too bad. I've significantly pared down my streaming services. I think I've got Disney Plus and I I think that's it, along with Crunchyroll now. Not watching a lot of TV, but out of the little bit of TV that I'm watching, I'm so glad it's this. This is such a fantastic anime, very popular around the world, in Japan and in the United States, and it's really working for me. I've just adored the animation, and that was one of the best parts of getting to go see this in the theater. This third season starts out with this demon character just waking up or appearing in what's called the Infinity Castle, which is this like other dimension where these demons hang out in, and it's just this enormous like feudal kind of era Japan castle, and it's, you only ever see the inside of it, but it goes on forever. Like, it's just like a ridiculous kind of like alternate dimension kind of thing going on there. And just overall the design work on this anime is astounding. It's some of the best animation I've ever seen, and it was great to get to see it, you know, on the big screen. So I'm glad I got to experience that. I had seen the film. Well, I was introduced to Demon Slayer via the first film, or the Mugen Train film, which is the kind of capper to the first season. They had started this anime with the first season, and then it led up to a theatrical release called Mugen Train. And I fell in love with this whole anime. And also, just like most animes, this was a manga. And I'm actually glad I didn't read the manga before reading the anime. Maybe I think at some point I'll go back and read the manga, but like, I'm glad I'm not watching this, comparing it to the source material. Although I've noticed that both the manga and the anime are well liked. So it's great to get immersed in a TV show like this, where it's just working for you on several levels. I've talked about it before in the podcast. It's just every aspect of this show is high quality. The writing, the animation, the balancing of the humor and the horror, because it is a horror anime, the action, everything. It's just top of the line, and I'm delighted to revel in it. And you know, what really sticks with me about this series are the characters, which is one reason I think I'll end up going back to read the manga. But the main cast are so sweet and interesting, and the villains are always deeper than what you'd expect. The backstories, I really am happy with this series, and it's going to be kind of a letdown trying to find something to replace it once I'm done with the series. I think there's like 7 or 8 episodes total in season 3, but all those episodes are, like I said, on Crunchyroll, so you can check that out there. And I'll move on to the next thing that I wanted to recommend, which was a comic book. I'm pretty sure I should have done my research a little bit better. I'm pretty sure it's from Image Comics, and it's called The Ambassadors, and I read The Ambassadors number 1. I think it's a mini series. It's from Mark Miller. Scottish writer. He rose to fame in the late 90s, early 2000s, but has kind of remained relevant since then, which is pretty awesome. He's the creator of Kingsman, Kick-Ass. What we know as the Avengers in the movies, in the MCU, kind of came from a comic that he did called The Ultimates. He's an awesome writer, one of my favorite writers, Mark Miller. This first issue of The Ambassadors is drawn by Frank Quietly, which is another superstar artist from that era that's still today a big deal. He's one of my favorite artists as well. And they worked together on a book called The Authority back in the day, late 90s, maybe 2000, the year 2000. They wrote The Authority Volume 2. So they followed up the first volume of The Authority that was written by Warren Ellis and drawn by Brian Hitch, if I remember correctly. The Authority, fucking awesome. They're making a movie over at DC in the next couple of years based on The Authority, which was announced by James Gunn recently. But so Mark Miller and Frank Quitely teamed up to do this book, to work on this project, The Ambassadors, that Mark Miller created. The cool thing about the series is that each issue is going to be drawn by a different superstar artist that that Mark Miller handpicked for each issue, and these are friends of his that he's worked or, and co-creators on projects that he's done before. So it's a lot of the artists that are coming on are kind of having a little reunion, creative reunion with Mark Miller on this project. Like I said, Frank Quitely drew The Authority with Mark Miller back in the day, and they've done other stuff together. I think they did the Netflix series Jupiter's Legacy. I think they did the comic book for Jupiter's Legacy together. That might have been the last time they worked together. But Frank Quitely, you know, is also the artist on All-Star Superman, which is what James Gunn is going to base. It seems like he's basing the Superman Legacy film that he's directing. It's based on All-Star Superman, which Frank Quitely drew in the mid to early 2000s. But anyway, so the book in question here, The Ambassadors, Ambassadors number one, I've read it, and it's what I kind of expected, it's what I wanted from a Mark Miller, Frank Quitely comic, which is, let's see if I can explain it correctly. It's high concept superhero. It's straightforward superhero stuff, but it's high concept. It's superheroes in the real world, kind of situation. It's the same approach they took with the Ultimates, which was, the model for the MCU that, that we ended up, seeing in the films. It's just a modernization of old superhero tropes, essentially. So the basis for The Ambassadors is this super genius woman. I think she's Korean. Yeah, she's Korean in the story. She is Korean. And in the story, she reveals that she's the first superhuman. This is after like decades of like a superhero arms race that's been going on between like China and Russia and the United States, Japan, you know, just the countries that hold the most power and almost near limitless resources. So she appears at this like world conference thing and comes out, and she's in a super suit, and she's, you know, everybody's astonished because there's never been superheroes in this world before. It turns out she's really not there in front of them. It's a body that she's at that moment downloading her consciousness into from. She's remotely doing that from a prison cell. And the moment she's fully downloaded her consciousness into this body with superpowers, flight and invulnerability and all kinds of other stuff, she ends up shooting herself. Commit suicide in the prison cell. So now she's in this, her consciousness is in this super high tech, whatever, clone body with superpowers. And she gives, it's not a really ultimatum, I guess, but she says she can give, I think it's 6 other people superpowers in the world, but she doesn't want it in the hands of the, you know, the rich countries and stuff. She wants to give these superpowers to people that are good, that are like deserving of having such superpowers. And that's the premise. That's how the first episode kicks off this series. And yeah, I think one of the last panels is like, you know, the presidents and the political powers in the world, prime ministers and the generals and all these people just shocked that they're not going to get any of this power, and that it's just going to go to some, you know, some average human being. And that's the thing too. It's like, I think each issue, because this is Ambassadors number one, and it focused on Korea. I think each issue is going to be an international type thing. So she's going to be handing out, this character going to be handing out superpowers to people that are, for lack of a better term, auditioning for these superpowers from different countries. They're going to be people from different countries, it looks like. I'm pretty excited for this comic. I didn't know Mark Miller was putting this out. I like the idea of bringing different superstar artists to each issue. Some of these artists are some of my favorites of all time. So, yeah, I read the first issue, and I'm enjoying the story. So I'll definitely be bringing this up on future episodes of the podcast. And so I'll move on to the very next thing, which is actually the 2000 Movies review of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. So 2000 Movies is, if you're not familiar with the segment on the show, this is where I do a solo review of a film that I've just watched. And 2000 Movies is, I name it that because these are movie reviews for movies that have been released after the year 2000. So it's 2000 Movies. And this one I watched a couple weeks back now. It's been out for maybe 3 weeks, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. So most of you have watched it, I'm sure. But if you haven't, here's a spoiler alert, because I'm going to be brief with this review, but in case I spoil anything, here's your spoiler review. So this is probably my favorite after the first one. So if I were to rank Guardians of the Galaxy movies, I think the first one is my number one, and this one's my number two, and number two is number three. So, I want to say too, I like the second one as well, but this one I prefer over the second one. This one is the wrap up, and it feels like it had the most stuff going on in the film, but it didn't seem bloated either. I really enjoyed that. I want to say it's the longest one of the three films, but I didn't feel it when I sat in the theater watching it, which is always good. I'm going to say Rocket Raccoon's my favorite character in the series, and this turns out to be his movie, and it actually turned out to be his trilogy if you go back and rewatch these films. I feel like most people have watched this if you're listening to this podcast about pop culture. I personally gave it my rating was I was toggling back and forth between a B and a B minus, and I think I settled on a B minus. There's stuff in it that might feel superfluous. There's some fake outs in there that can be a little too deliberate, like I can tell you're fucking with me type of fake outs, which could take someone out of the film, out of watching it. For the most part, yeah, this one, I mean, it does everything that James Gunn is known for, which is being great at big fun, bombastic blockbustery type stuff, but with big heart. And this one, I'm a man, so I don't cry, but I did well up several times, which doesn't always happen in a superhero movie. I think the Spider-Man movies will do that to me at times, and this one definitely did that. It really choked me up at moments. Beautiful looking movie, but I mean, James Gunn's, especially his Guardians of the Galaxy movies, are just visual feasts, and he uses slow motion just enough. He doesn't overdo it like Zack Snyder or some other action directors. Yeah, overall, the trilogy is just one of the best in the MCU. The cast is great. I brought up Rocket, voiced by Bradley Cooper, but man, like Karen Gillan playing Nebula's a revelation. Like, I mean, but she's been doing that since that first movie. Every time you see her after that first movie, there's more dimensions to her, and it just keeps it interesting. And Mantis was the same way, and Drax is the same way. Drax gets his full-on story arc wrapped up in this one, which is very satisfying. Yeah, man. Bravo. And congrats to James Gunn and the cast. This really came together and paid off, and it's sad that's the last version of this crew that we're gonna get in this capacity, but I'm glad we got what we got, because it was unexpected. Nobody knew what the fuck the Guardians of the Galaxy were, you know, after getting familiar characters introduced to the MCU, and then out of nowhere these guys come out. And then, like, I remember when the first movie came out that summer, leading up to the fall, I remember seeing kids with Star-Lord masks on, going off to Halloween and stuff. And I was like, what? Like, a year ago, that kid would have not had a clue what the fuck a Star-Lord was. So it's kind of crazy to see, you know, pre-Guardians of the Galaxy versus post-Guardians of the Galaxy. The way the world just kind of, like, set, you know, at a moment's notice, just kind of changes like that. And then also, you know, I better do this because one of my favorite parts of these movies is the soundtrack. I think this one had the best soundtrack out of the entire trilogy. It had my favorite band of all time, Radiohead. The film starts out with an acoustic version of Creep. And it's funny, I felt like the biggest Radiohead fan in the movie theater. Yeah, just because it's, like I said, it's my favorite band. Let's see, we heard some Faith No More, which is also one of my favorite bands. We saw, let's see, Heart had Crazy on You, In the Meantime by Space Hog. The 90s were representing on the soundtrack. The Beastie Boys, No Sleep Till Brooklyn. Florence and the Machine had a great needle drop in this one. And then, of course, they tied it back to the first movie with Come and Get Your Love by Redbone. Yeah, fucking, it's so satisfying. This, you know, after the current string of MCU movies being so-so, it's great to get this one. And then this one wasn't, you know, super reliant on a bunch of other films. So that was, it was great to sit down and just dive into this world that James Gunn is so expertly designed and set up for us to enjoy. So, you know, I'll keep it in the music realm, because I've been loving the shit out of this new album. I've been listening to it almost every day. It's called Scaring the Hose, Volume 1, and it's a collab between Danny Brown and JPEG Mafia. Danny Brown's been in the game, been on the scene, I should say, for 12 years now, something like that. And he's been on my radar about 7 years now or so. I remember him mostly as a feature on Danny's been on Run the Jewels. I think he was on Run the Jewels 3. My favorite song on there has got him on it as a feature. He's featured on Gorillaz. He's featured on some Eminem. He's featured on a bunch of other stuff. He's got several albums. But for whatever reason, like, I'm responding more to his work on other people's projects rather than his own stuff. I've tried his own stuff, his solo stuff, and I'll find tracks here and there. But for the most part, I haven't, like, really gotten into a full-length album of his. But I'm just really intrigued by his ability and just his persona too. He's got a podcast, which I'll actually talk about here towards the end of this episode before I wrap up. But Danny is yeah, he's not like a household name at all by any means, but he's really been making waves on the music scene. And then JPEG Mafia, is he's been around 5 or 6 years, maybe, or something like that, or at least since getting, you know, some recognition online and stuff. But he's been on my radar for much less than Danny has. JPEG's been on my radar for about 3 years now. And I'm also as intrigued. I have gotten into JPEG's albums. I've gotten into one that came out a couple years back called LP. And I really enjoyed that. He's got a song on there called What Kind of Rapping Is This? And that kind of sums up both these guys. Their rap music isn't mainstream at all. It's the type of stuff that would be playing at a party somewhere and someone would be like, what kind of rapping is this? It's not impenetrable in how out of left field it is. It's great and you can get into it, but it's not what everything else sounds like these days. And I really appreciate it. It's been one of those kind of journeys with getting into these two guys, in the sense where it's like at first I'm not sure what's going on, but I can't turn away. So yeah, I've really been enjoying these guys popping up here and there. But they just dropped an album called Scaring the Hoes, which I kind of had been hearing about leading up to the release of it. But this shit really popped off when JPEG Mafia was a guest on Danny Brown's podcast. And I was really interested in that. And lo and behold, that's what they were there to do, was to promote this new album. And they played a track. They played the first track off the album at the end of the podcast. It was really cool to, because I hadn't watched very many videos or interviews with JPEG Mafia, so it was interesting to see what kind of guy he was. And then just Danny Brown is just so entertaining. It's, you know, as much as I was getting into Danny Brown, I was a little skeptical about him having a podcast because he's so kind of over the top. But he's made for it. Like, he's a great maybe... He's a good podcaster, but he's a great entertainer. Just being himself, he's funny and charming and just weird, but in a good way. So that was really cool. And then the album dropped after I watched that, and boy, I've been listening to it nonstop since. When was it? I think the end of March, the beginning of April. I've been listening to the shit out of this album. It's so. It reminds me of when the first Gorillaz album dropped and I wasn't sure what the fuck was like, what is this? How seriously should I take this as art? And then it turns out that it actually is art. You know, it's more than just, it's not one dimensional. There's more to it. And the creativity is just bursting at the seams. With these guys. And yeah, man, like with Gorillaz, you know, they proved that they were more than just funky beats and stuff when they released the second album, the third album, and so on. And that's what I'm kind of hoping with this, with Scaring the Hoes Volume 1, is that there'll be a Scaring the Hoes Volume 2 and a Volume 3. I did see that these guys are touring the country, and it'd be interesting to see what a live show with Danny Brown and JPEG Mafia would be like. I have a feeling I'd really enjoy one of their live shows. But till then, I'm checking out Scaring the Hoes Volume 1 on Spotify, and I'm looking forward to more projects from both these guys. I'll give a shout out to the podcast, the Danny Brown Show, which is Danny Brown's podcast. The episode he did with JPEG Mafia, which is a great episode. I listened to it two and a half times so far. Really good stuff on there. That's episode 43 of the Danny Brown Show, and it it was released February 28th of 2023, and Scaring the Host came out shortly after, mid-March or something like that. Boy, I've listened to the shit out of this album. This is the type of album that I'm always looking for, something that I just want to keep listening over and over. The day Scaring the Host Volume 1 dropped was the same day that Lana Del Rey's Ocean Boulevard album dropped, and as you know, I'm a ginormous Lana stan, but I've listened to Scaring the Host way more than this new Lana album, and this new Lana album is getting some of the best reviews she's ever gotten, and I'm really enjoying that album. But just to give Danny and JPEG their dues, their proper respect, is I've been listening to their album way more, and you should check it out. And it's one of those type of projects that it's, on repeat listens, you'll get more and more out of it. So that's really what's taking me back, or getting me to play it on repeat this whole time. So the Danny Brown Show, the podcast, like I said, episode 43, it's got JPEG Mafia on there. And you can find that on Spotify, you can find that on iTunes, on the iTunes podcast app, and you can find it on YouTube. I think that's all the crossing the streams we've got for this episode. I even squoze in there a 2000 movies review. All right, so I'm going to tie a bow on this thing right now and say that for all things Mind Grenade, like a feed of the podcast, my art gallery can all be found at mindgrenadestudios.com. So thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. This has been Hector saying so long, and we'll talk to you soon. He was a big